Audio version of Michael Leitman's blog. October 19, 2021. I ask to change me, not the Creator. How can one reach a prayer that will come from the very bottom of the heart and will reach the Creator? We need to imagine that we are inside the Creator, the only force, apart from which there is nothing. And therefore everything we receive and feel, everything that happens in our thoughts and desires, comes to us, from the upper force, the good who does good. And if I don't perceive it as good and benevolent, then I feel suffering and have to ask the Creator to change my perception. I have nowhere else to turn. I can't change myself because I didn't create myself. I can only ask the Creator to help me change. Moreover, I ask not to change my desire to receive, but to add to the desire given to me by the Creator an intention for the sake of bestowal. In all my qualities, desires, and aspirations I want to work for the sake of bestowal. I'm not asking to change my desires, but rather my intentions. And to the extent that my intentions are similar to the Creator's intentions, I will reveal Him and His desire to bestow to me. We will meet with Him within our intentions, and there I will reveal my merging with the Creator. There are no personal calculations on the part of the Creator, everything depends only on us. The Creator is absolute goodness toward everyone. He is always an absolute bestowal, without any delay. Therefore, if we are ready, we will get His answer. And if we are not ready, then we have nowhere to receive and feel His attitude to us. Every moment He tries to advance us, to merge with Him. From the first part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, October 17, 2021, Writings of Balhar Sulam, Shemati number 24. He will save them from the hand of the wicked. The only place to meet the Creator. If I do not see success, it means I am not working in the group. It is impossible to reveal the Creator alone. You must be in the ten in order to do this. The person is inside the group and the group is inside the Creator. I cannot bypass the group and break through to the Creator, I must connect with it, and only after that will I reach the Creator. After all, I myself have no vessels, no ten sephirot for communication with the Creator. I have only one Sephirah Malkut, so I have to annul myself before the group, which are my first nine Sephirot. Then I will have the full ten Sephirot, and with them I can reach the Creator. It is a law of nature and it does not work in any other way. If I do not work in a group, I will not come to the revelation of the Creator. Everything starts with my annulment to the group. This means that I exit my individual perception and become included in the group, and then together with my friends I already face the Creator. Therefore it is said, from the love of the created beings to the love of the Creator. The group is not just a springboard for jumping to the Creator, but a vessel inside which I reveal the Creator. I have to prepare the kli for feeling the Creator by becoming included in external desires and nullifying myself. To the extent that I nullify myself toward the group, I can feel how the Creator is also nullified toward all of creation. This is a very strict principle by which the system of nature works, and we cannot change it. If we accept it, we will reveal the Creator, and if we do not accept it, we will not reveal Him. The group is a vessel for revealing the Creator. After all, I am just one point, one pixel, and I cannot do anything alone. I need friends, preferably ten of them. I become included in the friends as Malkut in the nine upper Sephirot and accept their egoistic desires through my nullification. It turns out that I already have a kli in which I am included above my ego, and therefore I can reveal the Creator. The rest of the friends will reveal the Creator according to the efforts each of them made. Maybe I feel the Creator at the eighth degree, and someone has nullified himself more and feels Him at the 15th degree, and another one even more, and so on until the 125th degree. I have nothing to look for within myself by delving into my egoism. There is nothing but egoism within me. The Creator can be revealed only above egoism. Therefore, when I am included in the group, I get a springboard that allows me to jump above my egoism. Despite the fact that perhaps my friends are egoists, if I nullify myself before them, then they turn into a glee for me, a glee in which I reveal my nullification toward an external desire and toward the Creator. Therefore, I reveal the Creator within this glee. The Creator is revealed within the friends. It does not matter that the friends are not corrected because I reveal not their qualities, but the Creator, to the extent of my nullification toward them. Therefore, the group is not just a means to jump over to the degree of the Creator. I meet with the Creator within the group to the extent of my inclusion in it. And not only that. The entire common desire of creation that exists in the universe on the inanimate, vegetative, animate, and human levels turns into the matter within which I reveal the Creator. Therefore, it is worth annulling ourselves to the group as much as possible, but always with the intention to reach the Creator through this. In the group, everyone builds their own view of the friends in such a way that the upper force can be revealed there. From the first part of the Daily Kabbalah lesson, October 17, 2021, Writings of Baha Sulam, Shemati number 24, He will save them from the hand of the wicked. New Life 1320. The Generation Gap.
Hello, and thanks for joining us on the New Life Show with Dr. Michael Lightman. Hello, Dr. Lightman. Hello, hello. Hello, Yael Eshedarel. Hello. And today we'd like to talk to Dr. Lightman about the generation gap. Those watching us online, through Facebook, you can send us questions live, and we'll try to at least ask some of your questions. Yael, please. The generation gap was always there. But we see that because the pace of changes in the world is growing and life is changing all the time, the gap is broadening too. The main problem about the generation gap is communication. Each was born into a different reality, and this reality brings a different culture, a different language, different world to view with it. Life seems different. And what happens in practice is that there are communication problems, misunderstandings between two people from different generations. And this is something that exists in all fields in life. In family life, the gap exists in all fields. Family life, workplaces, in every place where two people from different generations want to communicate. Today, life's more technological, fast, global, sophisticated. There are many options, possibilities that the previous generation, or let's take a family where the parent doesn't understand that they exist, that their child is born into a completely different reality. The work, the world of work, there are completely different options. The way you conduct yourself at work is completely different. The period of time that you are at some place of work, the way you get to know people, it's through the internet, you raise children differently, you court differently. Reality is completely different. And in this entire reality, we do want to have good relations and good communication between people. And this is what we'd like to talk to you about today. So the first question would be, we tend to think that it's a technological gap. And the question is, what is the main barrier? The gap between the generations is the barrier. This is what's called barrier, that one generation is blocked toward the other. And I'm not talking about language,
рамат інтелігенція, ані мідавер
level of intelligence, simply talking about the way of thinking, perception, expression, understanding of each other is completely unsuitable. It's like a plug in a socket that, you know, they can't communicate. And what is the main mistake that the older generation makes toward the younger generation when they do try to communicate between two completely different programs? Right? And you can't understand. But there's just one thing. Love. Love can help us connect, clothe in the other person in order to cause good to the other person and adjust myself, adapt myself to the other person. What is there about love that can bridge so many gaps? It leaves these gaps, understanding that it is impossible to reach a true understanding. I will never be able to clothe in the young generation, and I have no ability to understand them, feel them, make something of myself or some kind of adapter between the generations, but just one thing. Love covers all gaps. What kind of connection do they need to create between them so that love will be able to cover everything? As much as possible to do good according what to the other generation understands that is good. What will each give the other? What the other wants? What will the grown-up give the young, and the young will give to the grown-ups? If they have what to give, if they have the desire to give, then they will try to learn what's good for the younger and try and bring it to the younger generation to the measure to which the younger wants it. Today the main problem is that the young generation sees adults as irrelevant. For sure. It's true, it's correct. I'm a father and grandfather, and I feel it, sure. And the feeling is that older generation, that they don't want anything from us. What can they? Rabash, my teacher, a great Kabbalist that of recent generations, he used to say, the young generation demands of us two things. Open your pocket and shut your mouth. Because to that measure, we don't understand them. We can give them what they want, and not to express any opinion of ours. That's it. This is actually what can be done. But, you know, he says this as, you know, kind of half a joke. But if we really want to reach connection with the other generation, it is only by learning what do they need, what do they want, what do they like. And this is what I try to give them. A question online from a viewer that says, what kind of love is that? Are we familiar with the love that you're talking about? Or is it something new? No. I'm talking in general, even about ordinary love of parents toward children and just people. If we want for the other person to understand us, we need to love them. You're saying that even though that we grew up in two different perceptions, we're two different creatures to a large extent, completely, says Dr. Lightman. Despite that, I have to put aside my opinion, what I think, about how the world is. What do you need it all for? What do you need to take it out of grandma's box for? She doesn't need to take it out. These are her opinions and thoughts. That means to bring it out because she wants to present it to the younger generation. So she can separate between her world views and what she expresses toward the younger generation? Yeah? Why does she have the desire to open this box that she has from childhood, from adulthood, from teenage years, wanting to present it to the younger generation? They don't need it. It disgusts them. What do I leave in the box, and what do I take out and use so that there will be a connection and love? Besides what the younger generation wants, everything else you leave in your box. So to practically understand, it means that I'm supposed to listen to what they want without being judgmental, without your own participation in it, right? And even though that many times it contradicts my worldviews, that's not important. So I listen to what the younger generation wants, and I'm trying to give them what they want and ask for without criticism. Okay, so the main word is criticism here, okay. What does it mean without criticism? I am not going to criticize them. Are they thinking correctly or not, even to the measure to which it might harm them or not? Even to the measure to which it might harm them or not, I don't judge that. I think so. It also won't help. It won't help. Even though that you can limit them in doing something dangerous and they'll do what you're saying, what you're demanding, begging, and they'll do it, they will not remember it to your favor. One of the examples we've collected from the public spoke of courtesy gaps in a family when a parent grasps what the child says as disregard, disrespect, as offensive, and for the child, this is the language he speaks. Yeah, that's clear to me. Or, for example, their friends come to visit, and, you know, in my generation, when someone comes in, you say hello, you respect everyone, and then you go in. Today, no. Today, they come up, they ask, where's, I don't know, Jonathan? Or they simply open the door or knock, open the door, and go in. No hello to anyone. Now, parents see this as an insult. How do you deal with the situation? Swallow it quietly. Swallow it quietly. Otherwise, they'll talk about Jonathan's parents. They'll say such things that you won't want to hear it. You'll be ashamed that there are dinosaurs living in his apartment. Right. Sometimes that's the feeling, that it's like a dinosaur talking to some, I don't know, innovative creature. So you're saying not to educate. Not educate. What are you talking about? Educate. What words are you using here? God. I don't know. It's necessary to build some village for these elders, for them to end their life there quietly and not stand in the way of the young. A question from a viewer. Why is that so? The circle of life is supposed to include all generations, but if we won't share from our experience to the next generation, why did nature make it that way? What do we have to give each other? Are we not supposed to learn from each other? When I was young, then we were taught that the gap between generations is 25 years. It shrinks since then. Today it's 10, 15 years tops. Right? Right. Even, and not even 15. So if that's so, and it does not depend on us, but we see that as coming from nature, we need to accept it and to try to somehow be that we ourselves will change too. We need to catch up with the pace. Why did nature to begin with create gaps between generations? How otherwise could there be advancement? Every generation and their needs. It even says, in all the ancient writings, there are such things that our times from 2,000, 3,000 years ago, it is already written that our times, are unfortunately, are not like it used to be. That's written 3,000 years ago. Children don't want to listen to their parents. So you're saying that that's natural and we need to accept it. And still, what life wisdom does the previous generation need to pass on to the next generation? They won't learn from the older generation anyway. They won't. They will learn only from their life. Therefore, we need, without talking, without opening our mouth, to build such an environment that they will get from the environment the morals that we want to pass on to them through words, but that we can't, that we stop ourselves from doing. They need to learn it from life itself. What you said is very powerful. That's strong. I mean, we need to build an environment in which they will, that will educate them like a womb, and they absorb it naturally without us educating them, preaching them, or nothing of the kind. Right? And if we don't build it, but we're actually being lazy about it, and we think that through our words, you know, with pride, with different, I don't know, caprices, we can pass something on to them, the effect will be the opposite. Okay, so how, from what you just said, how do I give my child an example? I was offended by him. He will not take an example from you. He won't. Where did you ever see something like that? It happens. But it happens from life, that nonetheless, children that grow up, they absorb it from the environment, but not through words. So this is what I want to ask about. We talked about a situation where a parent insults, where a child insults a parent, and not on purpose, but because this is simply how they are. The parent's offended. What does he need to do now? What does he need to tell himself so that he can say, okay, let's let it go? He needs to be even closer to the child. He needs to be his friend. Friendly toward him. To be a kind of friend, and yeah. That, and it gives what? That he doesn't intervene as a child, he doesn't present him, that he doesn't intervene as a parent, that doesn't present himself as a parent. So what is his role as a friend? No, it's not about connecting to them. Why do you want nonetheless to somehow, you know, clothe on the child, dress, you know, that's my nature as a mother. So forget about it, let it go. What then? You can be a friend.
Okay.
Ideally, what should a relationship between the generations be like above the gaps? What do you mean above the gaps? Then it's like friends. Like people who understand each other, that talk freely about all these things, that don't preach to each other. But that they simply, we understand what is going on. We can talk about it, but not that it obliges us, but to just talk about it like some external problem. So you're saying to acknowledge that there's a gap, that there's a problem. Everyone's familiar with it. Everyone talks about it and knows about it. But we did not compel our children to, let's say, sum it up somehow.
להראות אהבה.
So what's the role of the parent in terms of education? To show love. Okay, and what does that love do? I educate them by loving them, by helping them, by doing the most that I can, most that they need, and I want for them to learn how to love about love from it, that another generation will go by and they will have children, my grandchildren. So this is how I would like for them to treat my grandchildren. So to teach them how to love, this is the role of the parents. Right, you can't pass more than that from generation to generation. What does it mean to teach love? Because love covers all crimes. If you go strictly, then rigidly, usually it really ruins a child's life. What does it do? It distorts him. Why? Because if it's not love, then it's not something that naturally comes from the upper to the lower, from the parent to the child. Our sages said, he who spares his rod hates his child. If you'll be too soft, then you're not doing your role as a parent either. So what's the balance between being a parent who draws the line when necessary and a parent that just shows love? What's the middle line? The middle line is that the child is afraid of losing your love. And this fear holds him and obliges him. What do I teach him? As a parent who wants to teach love, what do I teach him? About the measure to which you're concerned with his well-being, and you show it to him. And gradually from that he learns. And whether we like it or not, through these examples, later on, we nonetheless continue in life, and we build such relations in our family. What does it build in my child? An attitude toward his family. Today, parents pamper their children endlessly. No, that's not pampering. I'm not talking about pampering. Love is not pampering. What's the difference? Love is something necessary from which you grow. If there's no love, then there's no fuel to grow, to develop. A child needs to be in a state where he is cared for. He needs to feel it. This is what he needs to get from home. What's the difference between pampering and love? There is love that builds and love that destroys. Can you understand? Can you explain the difference? It's very important. This too is something that you have to teach. Love is something that needs to be taught. I'm getting plenty of questions about this. I'll add another question if you can sum it up. Why would the child be afraid of losing the parent's love and the parent never preaches? It's not about preaching, but a child will be afraid of losing the love. Why? Because here too there's a middle line, and we need to see, we need to show the child that he might lose our love, and then he will feel how much of an orphan he could be in life. How will you pass this feeling on to him? According to his actions, deeds. Give me an example. I don't know. But if a child does something bad, so accordingly, I need to show him that even though that I don't want to, but my love toward him is changing. He himself changes the pace, the intensity level of my love toward Him, it's all in His hands. To the measure to which He will behave, the better He'll behave, I love Him more, the worse He'll behave, I love Him less. But not that it's up to me, but it's in His hands. So there's love and there's feedback to the love, to His actions, and there's pampering, which is something different than love. So, final question. The difference is that for me there's always a broad, good pipeline out of which comes love. But the faucet is in the child's hand. Right, to ask you. Okay, so up until now we talked about the gaps between the generations, and at first you said every generation is blocked in relation to the other generation in terms of their thinking, perception. They don't fit. They don't suit each other. And then you said the key is there's just one thing, which is love. Love is outside of the one and outside of the other generation, but it's the connection between them, the good connection from the grown-up, the generation, the previous generation, to the younger generation. You're looking from the previous to the current generation, from the older to the younger. What about from the other perspective? I'm telling you that to the measure to which the young generation understands, appreciates, does not block the pipeline of love that comes from the previous generation, they enjoy it. What is the most unique component in the love that you're aiming for? What do we not give or pass on correctly in today's love? What needs to be added? What do we need to add? We need to learn how to love in a way that you will see the correct, proper attitude from your children to your grandchildren. And you're saying that it's something that is independent of the gap between the generations. Yeah, it depends only on the measure to which the children understand how much the parents put in everything for them. You mentioned grandchildren. A question. What is the special contribution of each chain between the generations? The contribution of the elder, the parents, and the child. Only love. Why is it that they love the grandparents more? Because from them doesn't come anything negative as if toward their grandchildren. Of course, because they're not living in the same house with us. You can say whatever you want, but the way grandparents love their grandchildren, it's not the way parents do, because mom and dad, they criticize. Mom and dad, do they need to behave like grandparents toward their children? Yeah. Simply to accept everything in a good way and just give love. And then if these relations will really work properly, then they will know how to add to that such hints, insinuations that the children will understand how good or bad it is in relation to the previous generation, older generation, and they themselves will try to adjust it. It's very subtle, you know. Of course, it's the connection between generations. Dr. Lightman, last tip till next time. Everything else according to the heart. The heart. Only according to the heart. Of course. Thank you very much, Dr. Lightman. Good luck. Thank you, Yael. Thank you for being with us. All the best.
My new article on LinkedIn, Extremist Islam, A Petrified Europe, and the Fate of the Jews. On Friday, Sir David Ames, a long-serving British lawmaker from the Conservative Party and the Honorary Secretary of the Conservative Friends of Israel since 1998, was stabbed to death while meeting with constituents in a church building in his home district. A 25-year-old man of Somali descent was arrested and the Counter-Terrorism Division of London's Metropolitan Police Force formally declared the incident an act of terrorism. According to its statement, the early investigation has revealed a potential motivation linked to Islamist extremism. On Wednesday, 2 days prior to the attack in the UK, a Danish convert to Islam killed 5 people in the Norwegian town of Kongsberg. The killer was a convert from Christianity to Islam, and police had been concerned about signs of radicalization in the suspect before the attacks, a senior officer said. There is very little Europe can do against the expansion of fundamentalist Islam. Both Muslim immigrants and native Europeans who have converted are becoming radicalized with dire ramifications for Europe and far-reaching implications for Jews. For centuries, Christianity had governed in Europe. It launched crusades to the land of Israel and was triumphant against invading belief systems, mainly Islam. However, today's Europeans are hardly religious, especially in Western Europe. In many ways, this leaves people feeling empty and in search of meaning. Into the void comes the currently most vibrant and aggressive religion on the planet, Islam. However, in many cases, it offers its explanation in such a dogmatic manner that people are given the choice to become devout and fanatic Muslims and get financial support, education, and a fully organized life, or be subject to constant intimidation, threat, and indeed homicide. For its part, old Europe is too tired and too insecure to stand up to the threat. It is yielding to the new power. For Jews, this can only mean trouble. Israel is already portrayed as the epitome of evil in many distinguished academic institutions. The progressive left and extremist Islam are in complete agreement when it comes to maligning Israel, and the rest of the world seems content with offering polite disapproval of any sort of bigotry. But hatred isn't passive, it percolates and slithers into the hearts of more and more people. Today, the veil of anti-Zionism is easily removed and exposes the anti-Semitism underneath. If people were embarrassed to admit that they support anti-Jewish views until just recently, now they are embarrassed to admit that they do not support such views. When anti-Semitism becomes mainstream, it becomes institutionalized. When it becomes institutionalized, terrible things happen to Jews. As always, when the world is in crisis, and today it is, it turns its anger at the Jews. We see it as looking for a scapegoat, and perhaps it is from the perspective of the rulers, but there is much more to it than that. From the perspective of most people, Jews are indeed responsible for all that is bad in the world. They do not usually act on their feelings or express them, but they feel it nonetheless. When things get really bad, they begin to air their feelings. Therefore, what we perceive as an increase in anti-Semitism is actually venting of pre-existing sentiments. The only cure against the growing aggression against Jews is Jewish unity. Where they always hated that cure because we hate one another more than we hate our haters, but it has always been our only rescue. When we did not use it, we were not rescued. It is not as though we've never known about it. In my book Like a Bundle of Reeds, I dedicate an entire chapter to excerpts from Jewish spiritual leaders of every era, reminding us that unity is our only salvation. Had we been united, our sages say, no misfortune would have come to us. When there are love, unity, and friendship between each other in Israel, states the book Morvah Shemesh, Light and Sun, no calamity can come over them. If there is bonding among them, and no separation of hearts, they have peace and quiet. And all the curses and suffering are removed by that unity. Similarly, the book Moriah Naim, Light of the Eyes, stresses, when one includes oneself with all of Israel and unity is made, no harm shall come to you. Likewise, the book Shemishmuel, a name out of Samuel, adds, when Israel are as one man with one heart, they are as a fortified wall against the forces of evil. The darker the clouds of Muslim fundamentalism grow in Europe, the more vigil Jews should become. Moreover, these clouds are now amassing not only in Europe, but in the United States, Latin America, and all over the world, and not only from Islam, but from all religions and all the nations. It is time for the entire Jewish people to unite and take the one pill that protects against Jew hatred, Jewish unity. For more on this topic, see my books Like a Bundle of Reeds, Why Unity and Mutual Guarantee Are Today's Call of the Hour, and The Jewish Choice, Unity or Anti-Semitism, Historical Facts on Anti-Semitism as a Reflection of Jewish Social Discord. My new article on LinkedIn, This Horror Show Shows Who We Are. A student of mine told me about a new show called Squid Game. It is a South Korean thriller series, as they call it, which has become a pop culture phenomenon and is the number one show in more than 90 countries. The show presents several hundred people who are all in great financial debt and in dire emotional states. The producers pit them against each other, even if they are very close, and make them hate each other. The winner takes millions of dollars, and the others are killed. This show wouldn't be so horrifying if it didn't portray our true nature. The very fact that we watch such a show enthusiastically is proof that underneath the civilized facade, our nature is as the show depicts. It works like a magnet. We love to watch the struggle between good and evil, as long as we are safe from the consequences of the battle. The thing is that in this show, there is no good, there is only evil. Indeed, humans are the worst being in reality. What makes us so uniquely evil is the fact that we explicitly want to harm others. We do not want to eat others because we will starve unless we do so, we want to see them suffer. We derive pleasure from others' pain, and derive the most pleasure when we are the ones inflicting it. We often say that reality is like a jungle, where the strong eat the weak. However, in the jungle, the strong do not want to destroy the weak, they want to eat. Once they are full, they want to sleep and play, and not kill or hurt for fun. In the human jungle, we do not want to eat other people, we want to see them hurting. This is why the natural jungle thrives without any laws, while the human jungle, which we mistakenly refer to as civilization, is disintegrating despite the laws that strive to limit our barbarity. If we had any hopes of finding goodness in human nature, Squid Game, and mainly its popularity, proves that we have nothing to hope for when it comes to human nature. If we can create such shows, and if they can be so popular, then we can do such horrors in real life. The only possible good that can come out of such a show is the realization that it is not fantasy, but an authentic depiction of who we are. Maybe if we realize this, we will be willing to do something about changing ourselves. The current trend is to dull our awareness of the human horror show we live in by making cannabis available and legal. Indeed, the more we learn about human nature, the more we realize that perhaps it is better to numb ourselves through life until it's over. For now, we're cheering at the sight of other people suffering, much like people used to cheer at the sight of poor men fighting against lions in ancient Rome. Only if we realize that it is not okay to be like that, our minds might open to other options. If such a diabolical program can be the number one show in more than 90 countries, it means that the entire world is immersed in unhinged viciousness. There is a solution, but it is demanding and must encompass the entire world if it is to succeed. To change who we are, we must initiate a worldwide educational process where such programs are forbidden and pro-human connection programs are produced and aired. Even if they are not popular, at first, we cannot allow ourselves to be exposed to the violent poison and culture of narcissism that we consume today. They may be sweet, but they are lethal. If people don't want to watch shows about human connection, they can put aside their media devices and simply talk to one another. This will already be a major improvement to the current situation. It may not sound like fun, but what is the option? To live out the squid game. Besides, after some practice, we will discover that connection and care are far more rewarding and pleasant than destruction and cruelty, and do not carry the negative side effect that is our current culture. My new article on LinkedIn, Equality, Equity, and Identity Politics. Identity politics is everywhere in both the US and Israel. Identity politics values people according to their ethnic or religious groups. Worse yet, a person who sympathizes with identity politics dedicates all of one's attention to righting the wrongs purportedly inflicted on one's own identity group, black, white, LGBTQ, Muslim, Jewish, Asian, male, female, and countless other groups that one can belong to. Identity politics professes to demand justice when in fact, it breeds hatred that can lead to civil war. Any identity politics, whether presented as such or as part of critical race theory or intersectionality, induces fragmentation of society and weakens it because it focuses on what separates people rather than on what connects them. Unity is the only way a country can survive. Therefore, even when we cannot find anything that connects us, we should strive to create that connection above our separation. We should know that anyone who portrays identity, race, or any faction as more important than unity is striving for division and will not contribute anything positive to the country or even to the faction he or she purports to represent. Many American Jews, for example, passionately support critical race theory. If they haven't already, they will soon discover that their ideology has turned against them. It will not help them to claim that they support oppressed minorities. The fact that they are considered white and privileged, and even more so, the fact that they are Jews, will haunt them and they will not be able to escape retribution. If Jews want to avoid another episode of persecution, they must shift their focus from defining one's social status by race, to defining it by care. The more one cares about people, whoever they are, the more one should be valued. We need a care-based society rather than a race-based society, and not just in the US, or in Israel, but around the world. Equity has become a buzzword among many advocates of identity politics. But equity is a poor surrogate for the real thing, genuine care and mutual responsibility. When you have these, you don't need equity because you naturally treat everyone kindly. The fact that we are trying to promote equity shows our absolute failure in nurturing a caring society. We needn't settle for it. If we try to enforce equity, we will only increase division and hate, but there will be no equity or justice. However, if we nurture care and concern, we will have equity, equality, and no concern at all for one's identity. Rediscover the property of love. Question: is the rejection that is being revealed in families now in order to make us understand that marriage and relationships are possible only on a spiritual component? Answer: only. In the same state as before our division, before the division into male and female parts. At the beginning of creation, there was one construction of a common soul, consisting of a male and a female part in absolute unity with each other, in mutual concessions, mutual fusion, mutual love, and mutual giving to each other. And then this property of reciprocity disappeared and completely equal constructions appeared, opposite to each other according to their desire, according to mutual animal cravings and other discrepancies. And now we are tuned into each other only to be satisfied at the expense of others. This happened because the quality of bestowal and love disappeared from us. Now no one perceives love as a great feeling. Today's love means that I am pleased at the expense of some other object, I fill myself with pleasure at the expense of it, so I say that I love him as I love a fish. Question: then why did the breaking take place and the property of love disappear? Answer: so that we realize that we need this property and it would appear in us, again. Then we will rise to its level, we will begin to create it in ourselves, move on our own to catch up to it, and explore how we can become equal and worthy of it. That is, we will raise ourselves to the level of the Creator. We will do this from our own desire, out of our own comprehension, we will become equal to Him in understanding, in knowledge, in management, in all parameters. We will acquire the status of the Creator. We must come to this. It is the right combination between a man and a woman that can give us this opportunity. Both husband and wife should be with points in their hearts that strive to merge with each other in order to attain the Creator. And Kabbalah will help them in this ascent because it tells about all the steps that must be realized on the spiritual path. Kabbalah is an instruction on how to act, an instruction for a happy spiritual family life. From Cab TV's close-up. Emancipation. The Four Attributes of Upper Governance, Part 12. Who does society need to aim at? Baal HaSulam, peace in the world, but in truth, the naturally strong and nimble in society benefit from the labor of others and exploit them maliciously against the attribute of truth, for they labor very little compared to the weak and lazy in society. Question: why is it bad to be a strong, nimble, quick person who takes initiative? After all, progress and development take place thanks to such people and not the weak and lazy. Answer: I do not consider progress being that people work many hours a day and also oblige others to work so many hours. Such smart, strong, vigilant people gather together and connect easily. And the majority is weak and lazy and it is hard for them to do so. Baal HaSulam says that in principle society should not place the strong and clever ones at the top because they set a standard of work and success that others cannot match and as a result they feel disappointed. Eventually, they are considered to be losers. But they are not really so, they are ordinary people. Therefore, society should focus on average people and not on successful ones. Just like in a family. I cannot punish my son for not being a genius or a great sportsman. Each one has his own abilities. I need to simply enable him to develop correctly, and then, it is his business. Question: does the fact that there is a big gap between rich and poor today, a gap that is ever growing, indicate that we have lost direction? Answer: of course. Entrepreneurs inflate society with unattainable goals, and they artificially make these goals unachievable for others. It turns out, eventually they get to keep everything. From Cab TV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, July 28, 2019. Paths to the question of the meaning of life. Question: why do Jews and the nations of the world come to the question of the meaning of life in different ways? The peoples of the world come to it from more of a quiet life, when everything is good for them. They have everything, and the Jews from suffering. Answer: this comes from the fact that the nations of the world reach satiation and discover emptiness in themselves. This is how ordinary egoism develops. It tries to fill itself all the time and because of thousands of years of effort concludes that it cannot be filled. What to do next? There is no reason to live. As a result, there is oblivion in drugs, suicide, divorce, in general, anything. In addition, they are driven forward simply by curiosity, the crisis of all sciences, the insularity of this small world. As for the Jews, it is very difficult to return to their original state again because of their complex internal hierarchical structure, which they absorbed and stayed in for 3,000 years. Because the spiritual tower they created in themselves and lived according to the laws of love and feeling, spirituality now has turned within them into the opposite. As a result of spiritual attainment, visions, sensations, all this turned into religion, into dogmas, into the mechanical fulfillment of the commandments, as in other religions that took their foundations from Judaism. They say that for the simple physical fulfillment of traditions, You will receive a future world after death and you do not need anything else. But in the end, we see that the nations of the world will put pressure on Israel until they force it to turn to Kabbalah, reveal it for themselves, show an example to the whole world, and then teach this. From CapTV's close-up. Element of nature that requires correction. Comment: numerous experiments show how much a person who looks after plants influences them with his thoughts. My response: a person influences not only plants and animals with his thoughts, but even stones. We just cannot examine it yet. There is such absolute interconnection and such absolute interaction between all parts of creation that if we saw this network of forces, we would find that only we humans are a negative, harmful element in this system of forces. Neither inanimate, vegetative, or animate forms of matter have free will, there is no egoism in them. They exist according to the laws that nature has embedded in them. Humans, however, thanks to their free will and their egoism, become the only harmful parts of nature. Question: where is the freedom of will of a person here? Animals act on the basis of instincts and people according to the will to receive, to use others. Answer: free will begins today when we become convinced that our previous path was flawed. At the same time, the desire for something higher is revealed in us, the desire to go beyond this world, to rise above it. This higher should reveal itself to us. Kabbalah helps in this. This is the only way we can correct ourselves. From CapTV's close-up, reference point. A tool for revealing the upper world. Question: if there is none so wise as the experienced, how can the text that describes the structure and mutual connection between spiritual bodies help me? Answer: Kabbalistic texts are not meant to make you wiser. Not at all. That text was written by a great Kabbalist who has been through this path. All of us, including you and me, have to undergo this path whether we like it or not, either in this lifetime or in our future reincarnations. By reading what a Kabbalist wrote, we summon the upper energy to us, the upper light, the good inclination, that ties us, and brings us, together. We don't understand this and sometimes we even feel that such an impact makes us feel repulsed by each other, but it is a temporary effect of start and stop, of going back and forth, which pulls us out of the dormant state that we are in so that we will begin to really get closer to each other and to the Creator. So reading books is a tool for drawing the upper force, the upper light, so that it will unite us. In the unity between us, we begin to attain the upper world, to see it like we see a movie, but more clearly, more emotionally, in our internal attributes. Can you imagine this? The movie is projected from inside you and you take a direct part in it. This is how the revelation of Kabbalistic texts works. From CapTV's Fundamentals of Kabbalah, August 18, 2019.